Welcome to VentureCast number 31. I'm Craig Severson of Menlo Park.
And I am David Hornick from August Capital.
And I'm Howard Hartenbaum, also from August Capital.
That's right.
Howard Hartenbaum.
What's he doing here?
Snuck in.
I know. Well, I'm going to pass the baton to Howard. The co-host baton.
You're done with us?
I've had it.
What?
Well, you know, our last recording, over a year ago?
It's been a long time.
And besides, you know, plague and ruin, nothing much has happened.
Right? Yeah, right, exactly. We've had an economic apocalypse. Mm-hmm. We've had we've had the rise of Twitter since last week. I'd like to say Twitter as many times as possible in this podcast. Would that be okay with you?
I've decided you cannot look at the news without seeing Twitter on the homepage.
Yeah.
Can't, because all news is Twitter. All news is good news on Twitter.
So, you thought about, let's have Howard on the show. And I said, let's have Howard co-host the show, because I think the two of you is going to be more interesting than me kind of wondering why the world's in collapse. So I actually, this is a show I want to listen to.
Let me understand this. So you basically are curled up on your couch in a fetal position, and you want Howard, you think Howard and I should just move on with our lives?
Just move on. I mean, help explain to us. You guys are still here. The office is still here. Venture Capital is possibly still working.
So far as I can tell. So Howard, welcome.
Welcome.
Thanks for the invitation.
Take care of him.
You say pass the baton, but that looks like a big, ugly mic.
Yeah, well, David wants to use this Omni mic in the middle of the room, and so that's what we're doing. That's why it sounds a little different.
Yes, it's not a reflection a reflection on Craig's incredible audio prowess. If he had chosen how to record this session, it would be entirely hiss and room noise free.
We'd be in dark rooms. Hey, someone's got a phone. I hear the buzz. We'd be in dark rooms.
Howard.
That's probably me. Yes, we've been whisper rooms with, perfect audio.
So how long has it been?
Been like the 31st of January or something, 2008.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
We took a year off.
We took a year off.
And more. Well, and then it took us until now for the three of us to have some time to actually
reschedule it.
Yeah.
And in that time frame, I met August, I got a job, I moved in here, and now I'm told that my real job is hosting David on a show.
Yeah. Exactly. That's
right. We didn't tell you that? That's the reality.
At least I know who I work for now.
That's right. Howard, you are my whipping boy.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I have another.
But I mean, I saw you guys actually invested in a company recently, which I thought, hey... So it's not all that bad.
Oh, we're busy. Right? Howard and I have been busy, right? I mean...
But on your blog, you talked about...
StumblePon, most recently.
Right, and then Aardvark.
Aardvark before that. Howard, what have you been up to?
And we put some money in a company in Germany, a first for us to invest in Europe, called Swoopo.
Swoopo.
Cool.
S-W-O-O-P-O. Swoopo. Does that mean anything in German?
I should have asked, but I don't know.
That wasn't part of our diligence process? Howard, I want our money back if we don't know what the name came from. So I also invest in a company called Ohai, O-H-A-I. Do you know what that comes from?
From the city, I think.
No, Ohai within the city is like with a J.
J, I know, right.
O-H-A-I, Howard.
It's some gamer talk.
Gamer talk, you're very close. It's even more troubling than that.
It's Twitter talk.
It's from lolcats.
Oh my god.
And it's sort of like, oh hi, how you doing? Literally, I'm not even making this up.
Can I have my money back now?
Which is worse, Swoopo or oh hi?
Wow.
And don't forget Pixaza.
Yes, that's true.
We have
money
one more.
Into Pixaza. How do you spell that?
P-I-X-A-Z-Z-A. I had trouble remembering that name at first, so I don't like the name.
No, time to change it.
To Swoopo.
To Swoopo. And then we could have, Howard, you could be an investor in Swoopo and Smoopo.
Excellent.
So Howard loves Swoopo, so I'm going to let you explain Swoopo for us. Tell us about Swoopo, Howard.
So Swoopo is, technically, its real name is Entertainment Shopping. And most of the time when you want to go shopping online, it's all about save time, save money. But that's not Swoopo. Swoopo is spend time, spend money.
I like it.
And that's good. If that's your business. What they do is it an auction that ends when people stop bidding. So it's not like eBay. It's more like Sotheby's. Mm-hmm. And every time you bid, it costs you 75 cents to bid. And it increments the price by a fixed amount, like a penny, for example.
A proportional amount to whatever was set?
Right. So they can sell a $2,000 television
yeah.
for $50 and make money because they'll lose $1,950 on the TV, but they'll make $3,750 in bidding fees. And so if you go to their website, everything sells for somewhere between 65 and 99% off, and it is great fun.
So the winner...
Here's $20. How much... What cut can I get on that company?
Probably nothing. So to give That's you the idea. Think about it, so you put two things up that are identical, two iPhones, and one sells for 15 cents and they lose a fortune on it, and the other sells for $50 and they make a fortune on it. So on
and
average,
they're a great deal for the guys who win.
Correct. And it's fun.
Wow, I like it.
It is fun. Now the problem that Howard has, unfortunately, is that he went to Smoopo, he was looking at it, checking out, and he was playing, like, okay, I'm going to bid on stuff, but now that we've invested in Smoopo, none of us are allowed to bid on Smoopo, so
that's right.
Whatever fun there was, we're out. We're not allowed to.
Sorry.
You're allowed
You guys have lead such a difficult life.
I know. How can we buy a $57 big screen TV? So you're going to fly to Munich, Germany.
Yes.
How often are they going to have board meetings over there in Munich?
Every quarter I will be having a very large glass of beer.
Very nice. And would that be on the plane or when you get there?
No, when I get there. I'll go to the most touristy beer house they have and...
Don't you love it? I love flying into... you fly into Germany and with Lufthansa and you go into the lounge area. And it doesn't matter what time of day it is, they are serving beer in the Lufthansa lounge.
And pretzels.
And people are eating them. Oh, I like the pretzel. I'm psyched about the pretzels. But just like the idea, I watch these German families and the parents get beer and it's 10 in the morning and you think, there's Orangensaft. Perhaps you would have. That was for my children. My children think that the only German word I know is orange juice. And that's absurd because I also know Schwarze Bohnen, black beans.
See?
And being a German name, Hartenbaum gets me in a lot of trouble in Germany. Whenever I come in, they say, Sprechen Sie Deutsch? And I say, Nein.
Nein.
And they say, Hable Español? And I say, No. And they say, Parlez-vous Français? And I say, No.
No.
Did they ever say in Japanese?
At one time, the guy said, Nihongo hanaseru ka? And I said, hai. And we started speaking, and he spoke perfect Japanese.
Wow. Really?
And he was a German guy.
It was the immigration officer. And I figured if he could speak that good in Japanese, and it was like the fifth language he tried on me, he probably can speak them all.
That's unbelievable.
Do you ever hear somebody who can speak three languages trilingual, and two languages bilingual, and one language is? American.
But seriously, folks, but your kids are growing up speaking Japanese, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. My kids are growing up speaking
the language of music.
Pidgin Yiddish.
Pidgin Yiddish.
What are you? Oi! That's what I'm... They're learning East Coast in my house. It's useful. So
it's not all dire.
It's not all... No, we've invested in 7 companies in the last 6 months.
I don't think our pace has changed. Over the time frame, it certainly hasn't gone up, but it hasn't gone down, and we're just looking for great companies, and it's a little bit easier to sift through them because there's fewer, and they tend to be better when the times are down. You don't have crazy people who shouldn't be in the business jumping up and saying, give me money!
So somewhat self-selecting.
Yeah, exactly.
And you guys did raise a fund, which helps, right? Yeah. Are other firms having trouble?
But most of the deals we did were before the fund, just before the fund was raised, or 5 out of 7.
Half or something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's tough.
Is it tough to raise a fund?
There were only 2 new funds raised in Q1. August Capital and Bain Capital.
Mm.
By the way, shout out to the Bain guys. They're awesome. Mm. I love Bain. We love working with them. They're smart, good guys. So they were able to raise money.
Wasn't Trinity's in the first quarter?
Nope, Q2.
Well, so they may have done it in Q1. They just didn't tell anybody.
Well, Trinity is raising capital in Q2.
They've
announced it
Twitter.
Q2. Yeah. Twinity on Twitter. That's Baby Bayo on Sesame Street. I'm not singing. It's just accents, Craig.
I know, but it's up to Howard whether you can sing, you know.
Oh, okay.
I've heard him sing.
Yeah.
Is that a yes or a no?
Yeah. For $20, you can sing.
For $20, I could buy a big screen TV on Smoopo. So, you know, which is worth more to you?
So one of the big concerns about fundraising was people who raised money last year, maybe there were some investors who put money in who have since changed their mind because times have gotten tough. And for us, we're quite pleased to have raised it kind of in the new year because the people who committed to the fund
mean it.
They know the position they're in and they're very comfortable with moving forward. So we don't have that concern that some other places might have.
Have firms taken a different strategic approach, like focus on their previous investments? Or can you even take a fund, money from a fund, and put it to a pre-existing investment? You can't monkey around.
You mean within, so if we have money in one fund, move it to another fund?
To back up a company?
Not really.
Yeah.
They're very clear rules about how cross-fund investing, what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think... I don't know specifically what our rules are. I think our rules basically require that we, when we do it, that we inform our limited partners that we're doing it, and they could object, and if they object in sufficient scale, then we wouldn't do it. But the reality is the only reason we would do it is because we believe that there's a real opportunity for the new fund.
Yeah.
And one of the other advantages we have is that there's a huge consistency between funds. So the lion's share of our investors in Fund 1 were the investors in Fund 2 or the investors in Fund 5. And so,
but I guess what the scenario I would describe would be more of that the company who might need more money just raises another round, right? That's what normally happens.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And generally you have enough money in the fund, in the prior fund, wherever you put money in before, to keep following. But there are some cases where you see other funds where they run out of money in that fund and they want to put more money in. In some cases they do take it out of the new fund. In some cases they don't.
Yeah. No, in fact, I've been talking to entrepreneurs. It's a real concern is if you're getting towards the end of your investor's fund and they need to have sufficient capital to continue to support you, you know, does it result in you selling the company or it's harder to raise money, et cetera? So, you know, the good news is as we look and as we march down, we reserve a bunch of money every time we invest that says, okay, we'll be able to continue to support this deal later. And then we stop, you know, hopefully in time, in a fund so that and raise a new fund and invest out of it so that we don't have these kinds of pressures. But it is way more art than science, right? Because, you know, you can imagine if I invest $2 million in some early stage company that in the software space, and then we invest $2 million in a chip business, we can guess that the chip investment will require a lot more capital than the software investment, but not necessarily.
Yeah,
you just never know. So anyway, I think it will be interesting. And the good news for us was that we were able to kind of get a group of people who were happy to continue to invest. The bad news is that there were a number of foundations that were perfectly happy with us and the performance, et cetera. They just didn't have the money.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing. I mean, big foundations that you've heard about.
Yeah.
Think, you know, NPR supporters.
Right, exactly.
Who just said, look, you've made us a lot of money historically, and we'd love to invest, but we literally have no liquidity, so forget it.
Were they with Madoff?
No, I mean, I don't think it was Madoff.
Yeah,
I think it's just when the market, you know, when the market decreases at its height, what, 40%? Then you can imagine that it creates real liquidity crunches. And then the second thing that it creates is this proportional problem. It was what had been called the denominator problem, which is to say that if an endowment wanted to have 10% in venture capital, and the venture capital valuation stayed consistent, but the public markets dropped 40%, then they were now 40% overweighted in venture capital, right? Suddenly, they have way more than 10% in venture capital, and they didn't want to then invest more in venture capital until those disproportionate relationships were sorted out. So we bumped into that.
Or they have a model where they're expecting to get money from distributions based on IPOs or other things happening, and they look at the market now, and that's going to be slower for a while, so they're afraid that they won't have that money coming out, so they get conservative.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it worked out. It was all good.
Yeah.
It was all good, Craig.
And I would think maybe like the activity for new companies might be increasing in some way, or smaller companies, because there's more people looking for work and creating
work.
That's
true. Right. It's a great, I mean, exactly. It's a great strategy when when you no longer have a job and you're looking to then create your own.
Yeah.
We see plenty of those. I think Howard got it right, that ultimately... smart entrepreneurs hunker down and focus on building businesses in tough times. And what you don't have are the people who would otherwise say, oh, I looked at the market and I did an assessment of the market and here's the little bit of white space and I'm going to build a business in that space. It's kittycats.com and it's going to be awesome because there's doggies.com, whatever, but there's no kittycats.com. And
there's a cats.com, but those are for bigger cats.
Yeah, exactly. But this is for the kitty cats. And then, you know, you end up with these kind of people you don't believe in the business. You're not driven by the passion to either build a big company or to build this particular thing that you've always wanted to build. Mm-hmm. And those are the best entrepreneurs, the ones who are driven, you know, it's who are, you know, internally driven. It's also known as mental illness. they can't help themselves. Those are the best ones, you know. Like, yeah. I just can't help myself. I have to build this business. I realize that this is the crappiest time to build
a
business.
It's going
to
be hard to raise money. The customers are not going to want to pay, but I can't help myself.
Yeah.
It's awesome. I'm in. We funded a bunch of those. It's good.
But you're not really looking for companies that might be trying to have a business that might address a downturn. Is that too trendy?
Well, the problem with it is that what if there's an upturn?
Yes.
Right? I mean,
right.
So
the trick is to find a company that's just a needed product or service that doesn't really matter if it's up or down.
Yep. Right.
Like porn,
right.
For example.
It kind of matters if... Oh, never mind.
But where were you going with that? I'm curious. Oh, yes.
But StumbleUpon. I know. I remember many moons ago you were... You liked that company?
I was excited about
it. And then they got acquired by some clowns or something?
That made me sad.
Yes.
Right, I was talking with them, and they were an interesting company, and then they got an offer, and eBay paid $75 million for the company. And I said, well, you know, on the one hand, I don't understand the fit, but hey, you know, good for
them. On the other hand, that's money.
Right, well, exactly. They had raised very little money, and they had an opportunity to make quite a bit as individuals, and so they took it. But what they realized over time was, hey, there isn't a great fit between eBay and StumbleUpon, and there's an opportunity to say let's continue to build an interesting independent business. And so the founders actually said, all right, we'll spin this company out, we'll invest some of the money that we made, and we'll bring in new investors to fund the company, and let's build a big business. And so August came in, and Excel Partners, and the two of us, along with Ram Shriram, who sits on the Google board and was an investor and on the board of StumbleUpon before, and said, "Okay, we understand that there weren't synergies. Let's go back to the basics of building a big company."
And so you bought it from eBay?
So we bought it from eBay.
Okay.
We paid them some money, and we took it private, and now it's a private company again, and I'm on the board, and. I've always liked StumbleUpon. The reason I've always liked StumbleUpon is that I think that the web is a big place now. You know, it's a big, dark, angry, dangerous place, and it's hard to find new fun stuff that's interesting to you. And yet, StumbleUpon has such a huge quantity of information about what people think, what sites people think are interesting throughout the web, that it gives you the opportunity to browse the web in ways that aren't possible through a Google or a Yahoo search, etc.
Right.
And I think there's a real place for that. So they've continued to do a good job. While they were at eBay, they increased the scale of the company up to 7.5 million registered users. So instead of sort of dying on the vine, they continued to grow. They just didn't focus on a bunch of things, interesting product and partnerships and monetization. So
and now we have a better situation that from our perspective, which is the founders have some money, and the next time somebody offers to buy them for $75 million, the answer is going to be no. They want to build a big business now, and maybe this will be a long-term freestanding company that we can all be proud of.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting design problem, because the thing I miss, the thing great about magazines and newspapers is that randomness. You know, in the online world, it's so targeted and so focused that, you know, we all kind of become narrower in our minds. And, you know, I like the Atlantic and I like the New Yorker because of that randomness. So if someone can pull it off on the web, which is what they're trying to do.
That described it in my venture blog post about it as sort of like, you know, the Dewey Decimal System, right?
Right.
If you're a kid and you're out looking in a library at books about snakes, hey, there are books about lizards, right?
Right.
And you didn't go out looking for the books about lizards, but they just happen to be next to it. And that, oh, those are pretty cool. Yeah. And then if you keep, oh, books about dinosaurs, like, oh, that's cool. And then books about dinosaurs lead to, you know, books about centipedes. And
right. It's like, you know, my wife shopping. I need some shoes. Oh, look at that hat over there. Hey, there's a car dealer across the street.
I was that is troubling, Howard. I was talking with my wife about the Dewey Decimal System. She is like the works at the library. She loves the library. Mm. She loves the Dewey Decimal System. And she was explaining to me how next year when she runs the book sale at the school, that she is going to make the books in the book sale be by the Dewey Decimal System so that she knows when someone says, oh, I'm looking for a book on snakes. Oh, that's, you know, HK blah, blah, blah. Which I thought, that explains so much. That's therein lies my life. The Dewey Decimal System will rule the book sale. So there, that's it. I think this show is pretty much going to be about our wives, Howard.
We won't need the Dewey Decimal System anymore because Google's going to scan all the books in the world.
And then you could just search arbitrarily by word.
By word.
But they're being investigated. Did you hear? I mean, the antitrust department of the United States government is reviewing this deal that they have with the publishing industry.
Yeah. I have a big problem with like this opt-in, opt-out stuff. Like the government can say to a marketer, sure, they can send you whatever crap they want, but if you don't like it, then you can opt out. And I'm a big believer, if I wanted it in the first place, I would opt in.
Right.
And that's what Google's trying to claim with the book thing. Like, oh yeah, we'll just scan everything, and if you own that book and you happen to know what we're doing, then you can opt out.
Well, there are two problems. So first of all, they were going to do it with all books that were no longer under copyright. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, they have absolutely the right to do that. Right. You know, the publishing industry freaked out about it, but there isn't any, you know, if it is no longer protected by copyright, then it's no longer protected by copyright.
And that's like in print, it's in like 1917. I mean, it's way back.
So it depends, you know, it's the life of the author. You know, exactly. Life of the author plus some number of years. So it depends on the author, right? Uh-huh. So, for example, my son has been writing the musical of The Diary of Anne Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
okay.
Which, you know, let's put aside...
First it's about our wives, now it's about our kids.
Yeah, exactly. Let's put aside how commercial a musical about the Holocaust is. I mean, The Diary of Anne Frank was written... I mean, you know, this one's pretty easy. We can go back and say, when was the Holocaust? We know when Anne Frank actually passed away, and we can figure out that the copyright is coming up, right? Mm-hmm. And so... there was actually a musical, believe it or not, written in Spain on The Diary of Anne Frank, and the family objected. They said, absolutely not. It's not in the spirit of the diary, etc. And it was still protected by copyright, and so to the extent that it was more than just factual information, they could say, you know, we'll put the kibosh on it. But by the time Julian gets done with his musical, it will no longer be in copyright. Right. So, hey. So anyway, but I digress.
Mm-hmm. That never happens.
Yeah, exactly. Howard will stop that, right? Howard will keep me from... Howard, by the way, keeps checking his phone to see what time it is. He's, like, done already. Are you tired of this already?
No, I'm actually enjoying it.
We're going to do this for years to come, Howard.
I have this problem. Like, I don't wear a watch, so I never know what time it is. Uh-huh. So this goddamn iPhone I have, excuse my language, yes. Every time I push the button, I see the time, and my 10-year-old daughter's picture smiles at me.
Uh-huh, right.
Which is very sweet, but you have two daughters... So what about
no, she liked, he liked
what
this one
your,
best.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the younger one's cuter.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Once they get into high school. Yeah.
Hey.
No, that's
you
right.
You start talking about my daughter.
You have a senior. Do you have
a junior.
Senior? June. Oh, I was thinking she was senior. All right, so you have another year of...
Another year.
But it's coming up.
It's coming up.
Tick, tick, tick.
College searches.
Wow, and, fun.
Yeah. Totally.
Okay, so the second problem with the book search thing is what I think of as the Larry Lessig problem. Larry Lessig pointed out, which is that there are huge amounts of orphaned information where, you know, it's still protected by copyright.
But
you couldn't
find
the copyright. Even if you wanted to find the copyright owner, you couldn't find them, and so it's information that's captive, that can't be free, and it can't be spread, and it can't be built upon.
But why is it everybody's right to expect that they should get it?
Well, Lessig would argue, the government says it's not, right? Mm-hmm. Government says copyright protection is copyright protection, mm-hmm. and if it's still protected by copyright, not to become Mr. IP attorney lecturer, but it's an exclusive right, and you have the right to control it. And so you can't just say, I'm going to use it. Lessig says that's a bad choice for society,
general,
right? That society, culture, that right. that in order to move society forward and to expand and grow culture in ways that will advantage all of us, Howard, even you, that you need to make those things available.
And so if people good. So let Google pay for it and then put it all on Wikipedia.
But they can't. They will, even if, let's say they could.
Who do they pay?
They don't know who to pay. This is the problem.
They'll pay the costs of doing it.
Oh, they'll pay the costs.
Yeah. And then put it all on Wikipedia so they get no benefit from it.
Oh, I would argue that they get immense benefit from everything that's on Wikipedia. Because what's the primary search interface for Wikipedia? It's not Wikipedia. It's Google. Mm-hmm. I once wanted to figure out that. In fact, anyone who's listening, if you want to do the math, how much money does Google make on AdWords served up to searches that go that are primarily to find information on Wikipedia? Mm. Wikipedia missed this unbelievable opportunity because it was a not-for-profit that they can't monetize it. So Google is the real winner in the Wikipedia race. Mm. I mean, they owe but Jimmy Wales a nice T-shirt.
Yeah, but the reason that Wikipedia is so great is because they weren't trying to make money from it, so everybody put the information up. Mm-hmm. If Google tried to do it.
Well, Google has tried, right? Don't they have their own version? They got their, they have a thing. They have a googly thing that is Wikipedia-ish.
We're starting to see a lot of those. Wiki this, wiki that, wiki target, wiki focus.
And answers.
Wiki mad and wiki sweater.
That's usually like right before it ends.
Right. Yeah.
You start seeing like little targeted verticals on everything copying. Well, it worked for Wikipedia and they didn't make any money from it, so we're going to do wiki shoes.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, and you can add your own shoes. I would. I'd update the Converse section. There's a lot of history, by the way, around the Chuck Taylor Converse shoes.
Don't get them started.
But that's a subject for another day.
Excellent. Well said. Well said.
Oh, now we. This is going to work fine, Howard. I think this is going to go well.
So you don't want my participation. You just want me to control David.
You're the babysitter. I didn't really say that, but that's kind of what it's all about.
It's getting clearer.
Okay, good. Right.
You know what I appreciate that we have. How long have we been going? Anyone have a sense?
I do.
I've been watching my clock the whole time.
Yeah.
20-some minutes.
20-some odd minutes, and we haven't mentioned the swine flu once.
I mean, well,
we have mentioned Twitter.
Obliquely.
We have mentioned Twitter, but we haven't.
We talked about plague at the beginning.
Oh yes, right. I'm sorry. Yes. Oh, my bad. You alluded to the.
I alluded to
the swine,
yeah.
Which is no longer the swine flu. It's the 1.2.7.4.3 flu.
So I was living in Europe when SARS hit, and I was doing quite a bit of traveling. And when I went into India one day, and they had at the border, they were funneling everybody down to thermal sensors so that they had guys sitting behind them looking for people with fevers. And if somebody's face came up red, they pulled them out of the line. I canceled the trip to China because the rumor was out, which ended up being true, that if you were trying to get into China, you'd already landed there, and you had a fever and you walked through the thermal sensors, they effectively imprisoned you for 2 weeks. They took you out of the city. They put you in these cinder block hospitals that had been erected very quickly to hold people for containment, and they basically locked you in your room until you either got over it or you died.
Which is, you know, look.
Most people got over it, but yeah. I would rather stay home healthy and watch TV with my family than die in a concrete prison.
Really?
You're so fussy.
You obviously weren't committed to your job.
Yeah.
Because
I, at the same time, was asked to go teach a class in South Korea. And I went with a group of people to South Korea. Now, mind you, there were no instances of SARS in South Korea, but it was enough to freak out my wife.
And there was no hospital prisons either.
No hospital prison in South Korea. We flew through flew through Tokyo, and there was a fair amount of
people wearing masks.
Yeah. Right. But then they'd like take down the mask to drink their drink kiss.
Or somebody would take it off, and then they're coughing. And put it back on.
Yeah, right. I don't want to trap the cough around my face. That would be.
So I think the big issue about that was that the reason SARS got to be such a problem was because the Chinese government unfortunately wasn't releasing the information when it was early on, and we learned a big lesson from that.
Yeah.
And hopefully the case now is that we're much more transparent with information. It will help the situation.
I just heard someone from the CDC saying that one of the reasons that this is going well is that the Mexican government immediately contacted the U.S. and Canadian governments and said, here's what's going on. How do we fix this?
So therefore, we will no longer call it the Mexican flu.
Exactly. Because that would be rude. We will call it the 7.2.4.6 flu.
The swine flu.
Did you see, though, actually, I sort of enjoyed this is a great example, speaking of Twitter, which I have been, of, you know, sort of where Twitter goes awry. I mean, the second there's a crisis, then suddenly swine flu becomes a hashtag. And if you search swine flu hashtag, it's just the amount of information and misinformation that's spewed on Twitter about the swine flu was just awesome. My cat has swine flu. Like, how'd your cat get swine flu? Eating bacon.
Making out with a pig.
Right. Exactly. That's more like it.
What about this blog? If you go to swineflu.com, somebody's making a lot of money from that. But for the fun of it, I typed in swine flu, F-L-E-W, to see what I would get. And I got a Japanese golfing site.
Nice.
And I'm thinking, like, a bad golfing site.
Really?
They should have changed it to some blog. They'd be making a lot of money, because I'm sure there's people typing in swine flu, F-L-E-W.
Yeah, I would.
I'd make flying pigs, like little stickers.
Yeah. Oink, oink.
Swineflu.com, now worth $1.4 million.
There is a little purpose-built site that just searches for the swine flu hashtag on Twitter and updates. So you can go to, I forget what it is, you can go to Michael Sippy's blog. That's how I saw it. And I love Michael Sippy's blog, so you should go there anyway.
Hmm. My daughter was playing a game on the web the other night called Pandemic, where you, basically it has a map of the world, and then all you see are like boats moving across the ocean and planes flying through the air, and you can set all sorts of things like, is this an airborne disease? Is this a waterborne disease? Is this a person-to-person transmission?
Is the goal to spread or stop
the
goal
pandemic? The goal is to simply adjust all of the parameters and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And so it's to teach about what happens in a pandemic. And I'm watching her do this, and you're watching the numbers, and the numbers start going up. She goes, oh, look, Madagascar just closed its ports, and now it's fine. It has no cases. And then yesterday I was driving her to school, and we hear on the radio, and Cuba has just stopped all flights going to and from Mexico. She goes, see, Dad, I told you that was a good game. Pandemic. Find it on the web.
It's an educational game. It really isn't about mass destruction and fear. I like it.
So is eBay in the business of creating businesses to later sell?
It would be good if they created them and then sold them, because they could get some value. And I can tell you that we've been talking with really smart, interesting people in other companies who have literally created businesses in those companies that may be interesting and grow and be more valuable independent from the original business.
Right.
So, yeah, but eBay, unfortunately...
Except for
acquired
PayPal.
Acquired a couple of businesses that didn't have a whole lot of synergies and now are being divested in ways that are interesting. So,
right. Yeah, Skype is going to... awesome, right? Skype is... They're never going to get rid of PayPal.
No.
But Skype, it'll be an interesting one to see how that plays out. I mean, they're filing to take it public, and we'll see how that goes.
So Howard, I mean, those of you listening, Howard was the very first investor in Skype. You helped them write the business plan and gave them the first, however many dollars.
But they did all the hard work. I was just along for the ride.
I know, but it was an awesome ride. That's all I'm saying.
It's like you're hanging out by the street corner and some really beautiful girl comes and picks you up in her Ferrari Testarossa and says, want to go around the block? But that never actually happened to me.
And so
that was a dream when I was 17.
Let's hope that Junko is not, in fact, listening to this.
Who knows? We got to resurrect the audience.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I have a feeling nobody is listening.
The beauty is that I just have to tweet it.
Ew, aren't you?
Isn't that the promise of Twitter? Yeah. I just say, VentureCast is back. And a link, and people go to it.
We'll see.
Or we can find people who have even bigger followers and
ask them to tweet.
We'll say nice things about you if...
Chris Sacca.
Chris Sacca is a great guy.
A billion people.
And he'll tweet this.
How many do you think he's being? I think Sacca's now being followed by like 400 or 500,000 people. He's like half. Chris Sacca is half of Ashton Kutcher. How awesome is that?
I hear Chris has two ghostwriters.
No, Chris is. I mean, Chris is just always doing interesting stuff.
He is.
And he loves to tweet about it. So we love Chris Sacca. We sure hope that he enjoys VentureCast, because, you know, what would be better than mentioning VentureCast on the Chris Sacca Twitter feed? Wouldn't that be awesome, Howard?
Chris is the coolest guy I ever met.
He's awesome. I think that...
I hear he's really good looking, too.
He's a beautiful man.
Yeah.
Chris Sacca. Those of you who don't know Sacca, he's a great guy. He's enough of that.
Yeah.
We've sucked up to Chris Sacca enough. Who else is in the top 100? Jason Calcanis. That Jason Calcanis.
Dorsey. That Jack Dorsey. He's a good guy.
Jack and Ev. Where would Twitter be without them? Look at now, Ev and Biz, who are the top 100 most important people, according to Time, in the world.
Amazing.
How sweet is that?
Didn't Jack just go to Iraq to teach them about Twitter?
Did he? Was that
he
his
did.
Trip?
I think he was on there, like young technology businessmen going to Iraq to talk about technology companies, and I was following his tweets.
See, this is what I'm saying. Twitter,
just
right?
lost our security detail, and I was thinking, does that mean they were killed? You ditched them, or you left the country.
Either way, it sucks. No, nothing
it's still
good.
A cool tweet. I never had a security detail. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Chris Sacco was in Ethiopia. I was reading his tweets from Ethiopia. Huh. Maybe in order to have a bunch of people following you, you have to go to cool places. Where's Ashton Kutcher going? Nowhere.
San Diego.
Oh, went to San Diego. Went to Legoland. What's he doing? Why
tried
did he
to get across the border.
Flowers?
They wouldn't let me.
Yeah, exactly. The real Shaq. I mean, he's doing some things. Mm. That's what I'm saying. He, you know, but Ashton Kutcher. Come on. And then Oprah, did you see? Oprah tried to tweet, and she failed. She literally, like, typed it in, was all set to tweet, and then, like, hit refresh instead of hitting, you know.
Send.
Instead of hitting send. So her very first effort at tweeting was, in fact, not. That's just sad. That's just sad. I mean, you know, it's the world's simplest. The whole point of it is it's the world's simplest technology.
Yeah.
Well, it's evidently not simple enough yet.
Let's make it simpler. You just think it. And it's instantly sent to all of your contacts.
But
that would
I don't
be dangerous.
Understand if she's tweeting for the first time. Yes. It's like a tree falling in the forest, right?
No, because she already got a million people to sign up. She says, I'm about to tweet.
No, you're absolutely right. Totally a tree falling in the forest.
Right.
Not if you're Oprah.
I'm here. But
no,
because
she said, I'm about to tweet, sign up, and then she yells.
Okay,
at
well, that's different.
Fine. If you're that's fine. You create the account and say, you know, twitter.com/ right, Oprah or the real Oprah.
Well, somebody else probably owns it already.
Oprah. She must have been something. I don't know what she was. I knew this would happen. I knew that fucking VentureCast would become TwitterCast.
No.
Come on.
You're the one who brought it up.
I know. And I'm, you know, I can't help it. I can't help myself.
That's just because we feel bad we didn't invest.
Well, that.
Okay, now Howard.
You were obsessing about it two years ago.
I was nice.
Oh. You're killing us. We got to talk about something else. What else have we got?
What's been successful? Come on. Come on.
All right, we're all out. Did I mention my partner Dave invested in Microsoft?
Yes.
How many
100
times,
years ago.
How many times? Oh, but this is unbelievable.
Seagate.
So Microsoft just had the first sequentially down quarter, I think,
ever.
In the history of the firm. But my partner Dave, who sits on the board, said that he's been on the board for 28 years, mm-hmm. and this is the first time he's seen a down quarter. Can you imagine, Howard, investing in a company that had... What does that mean? That's 112 sequential quarters of growth. Holy macanoli. That would be awesome.
That's why we're all in the venture business, is to get that company or something half as
keep
good.
Keep trying.
Or something that goes only sequentially for 60 quarters.
Yeah.
That's good enough for me.
I'll settle. I will settle for 60 quarters of revenue growth, sequential revenue growth.
So I met with an entrepreneur this morning who was at SGI. And we were talking about how SGI was recently sold for, was it $24 million or something like that?
25, 24, something.
And when he left the company many years ago, it was after the stock had hit its peak and was down 25%. And when he left, he decided to sell all his stock because he figured he wasn't going to be working there anymore. And he might as well sell it because he wouldn't be able to assess if the stock was good or more. Anymore.
Yeah. And so the price
and
was?
I didn't ask him the exact price,
no!
but it was in the billions,
but he
of
made,
course, in value. And so then we got into a discussion. I said, well, if you really wanted to sell it, why didn't you short it too? And then you would have made money all the way down.
Well, he didn't say that he thought they were complete idiots. He just said he wouldn't know if they were complete idiots.
Yeah.
You know, I once had stock in a company I had represented that got sold to a company that got sold to Excite at Home, and so I got Excite stock, but it was in my 401k because I had bought these shares, the original shares in the private company, from my 401k. Mm-hmm. And by the time I remembered that those shares were in my 401k, they had gone to zero.
Yeah.
Not like, you know, oh good, I'll sell them for $1.50.
Right.
They literally were zero. Oh. And then I had a problem because I had to prove to the in order to have them removed from my 401k, I had to prove that they were zero. Well, how do you prove that?
And you don't get any tax benefit from a zero in a 401k
either. Exactly. You don't get any tax benefit. Right. They don't send you a document that says, I am sorry. Your stock is worth zero.
So the lesson here is you have some great high-flying stock that you feel so good about. The price goes down a little bit, and you think, I'll buy some more. Or somebody else says, I think I'm going to jump in now. It's off 25%. It may go to nothing.
Mm-hmm. Or it may go way back up, Howard.
Maybe. But it could be a cycle doesn't always cycle back.
We don't need your damn pessimism. We need some positivity here in the markets. That's what I'm saying.
Buy stock. I realize I can't say which one to buy because there's always some comment about that.
Yeah, right. There are laws that preclude us.
I own like some index funds, so I'm sure if I say buy some stock, I probably own it.
Well, you guys can't give a recommendation?
You can, but you shouldn't.
Okay, no, you're not like a broker.
No, I was just kidding.
Oh, okay.
We don't have anything. I mean, unless our companies are on file to go public already, and then it's a quiet period.
Yeah.
Then we can't talk about them.
I can say you should buy whatever stock I have.
Mm-hmm.
You clearly should want anything we have.
Yes.
Just broadly speaking. For sure, startups are the most beautiful and...
But they're not public.
No, but just stay waiting.
Oh, and just admire them from afar.
And when that time comes, buy, buy, buy.
With all the IPOs that are
keep going on. Yes. Do you think OpenTable's going to get public? They're on file. They filed, in the heart of darkness. And
right.
What do you think?
I think it's a good company.
I enjoy the
service.
It's a general purpose mainstream company. I think they'll go public. It's just maybe it's not tomorrow, maybe it's next week or next month, but they're a good company. Let's talk about Facebook instead.
Well, we've already talked about Twitter. We might as well.
I was just reading all the news about how, different pricing on the company, and the big private investors want to come in at what they deem a fair price, and the sellers don't want to sell at what's deemed a fair price.
Which, of course, is also known as not selling.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's always fun to see the differential, but it just sometimes never meets in the middle, which I think is interesting.
What's the current perception of the sellers?
Well, I mean, just from reading wonderful blogs like TechCrunch, you'll see, offers at $2 billion to buy and offers at $5 to $6 billion to sell. So I'd say split the baby down the middle
and call it way too much money.
Right.
Call it a deal.
Speaking of TechCrunch, they also are in the top 100 most trafficked Twitter accounts, and so they should for sure mention how great VentureCast is on its return.
And see that? Absolutely. And I said how great they were before we pandered.
Exactly. That's just teamwork right there. That's what that
is. Wait, I'm not supposed to do this. I'm just supposed to keep you in check.
Right.
No, you can contribute.
No.
This is David's show.
No, sorry. No. VentureCast, the David Hornick show.
Yeah, sorry.
With
AKA
Howard Hartbaum.
Other people.
Yeah. Craig has been visiting for a couple years. Yes. How long do we do it?
A couple years.
Well,
if you don't count the year off.
Yeah, no, forgetting the year, but when we did it, how long we did it for a couple years?
A year and a half
or something?
Right.
That was good.
We were regular.
Good for you.
Every fortnight.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that.
I've learned a lot.
Well, you should come back.
And I've made a friend.
Oh, that's sweet.
I reserve the right to barge in any time and
you did.
Ask any questions.
All right. Well, we'll make sure that Mary includes you on the VentureCast scheduling list.
Well, are you following David Hornick on Twitter?
What's Twitter?
If so, I'll just. Because then
you'll
know,
and you can listen to the first show where you're not on it, and you can say, boy, it was so much better before.
I know.
You should probably not say that. You should probably tweet that. VentureCast sucks now that Craig Severson's not on. At Craig Severson says.
I don't know what.
Are you on Twitter?
No.
You're not on Twitter?
Well, I think I have an account. I think I sent a few.
I just read this thing, speaking of Twitter. That... All right, forget it. No, I'm not even going to mention it.
It's a time suck. I said this 2 years ago when you were going off on how great Twitter was. Like, what a waste.
Just going to waste your... 2 years ago, I was not that long.
You were going
a big
off
waste
on Twitter.
Of time.
Well, what am I, stupid?
No, you're not stupid.
I should be.
No, I'm saying you're smart.
I know, I was there.
You saw it a long time ago.
So, Howard, do you have an account?
I do.
What are you?
Howard H.
Oh, very nice. That's a good one. At Howard H.
And I don't tweet all that much, except when I'm doing some shameless self-promotion of my companies.
Mm.
You do a lot of that. It's pretty awesome.
That's my job.
You should get on Howard's mailing list, and you can find out about all the new shit he's put his money into, because that's all he emails you about. Like, hey, have you checked out Swoopo? Get yourself a $273,
TV for a dollar.
I just entered a what are they called, where you buy a ticket and... And you might win a thing.
Lottery?
It's not the lottery, though. What is it called when they have a private
drawing?
Thing, you know, whatever.
An auction.
I can't believe it.
A raffle.
Raffle,
that's
thank you.
No, let's talk about games of skill.
I just entered, yeah, exactly, like Swoopo. No, I just entered a raffle for the Ronald McDonald House.
Yeah.
$100 a ticket. They're selling 2,500 tickets, and the top prize is a Maserati.
Mm-hmm. Well,
how many tickets did you buy?
I bought one. So I have a 1 in 2,500 chance of winning a Maserati.
2,499. And if you win that, I'm going to be really mad.
You are a big supporter of the Ronald McDonald House, but I should point out to you that it is not tax deductible when you buy a ticket in a raffle, which is a shame because otherwise the expected value would be about the tax adjusted price of buying all of the tickets. Mm-hmm. How sweet would that be?
I know.
But you have to pay taxes on the value of the car when
that's
you receive
what you're
it.
Saying.
Oh, yeah. Then there's that.
So if you're
didn't include that? Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
If you're like 22 and you don't have a job and you win that, it sucks because the first thing you got to do is sell the Maserati.
But if you don't want the Maserati, you can take $60,000 in cash. So you can have $30,000 in cash, or you can have a $120,000 car and pay $60,000 in taxes. So once again, if you don't have the money, you're screwed. I'm hoping to win it. Because, you know, I think it would be a nice compliment to my Mini.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's your Mini out there.
Oh, do you see? That matches your car.
Ah.
That'd be cute together.
Do you have an orange car, too?
I have an orange car.
Jeez.
I got it first, though. He
you
copied
did.
Me.
So do I have to have an orange car to be on the show?
Is it time for you to buy a new car?
It's getting there.
Are you going to buy it online?
I think I'm going to buy an orange Honda Element.
There you go. There you
that
go.
You
that's
have?
Exactly what he has.
Oh, you're a badass.
Exactly, man.
How much for the car?
Well, we'll talk.
No, I was thinking about buying an Element because I have a big dog I got to put in the back, and as long as I got to get an orange car, mine as well be. How many cars sell that are orange?
Exactly.
Well, the Element sells an orange
it
one.
It does because Craig has it. That's exactly his car. That's
how much
awesome.
For the car?
Hmm?
How much for the car?
$67,000.
I'll take it.
I love it. It's a great car. It's so much fun. So goofy.
What about Howard? Why don't you get the Tesla? Or better yet, why don't you wait and get the Tesla S?
Right. Get the Tesla. I'll trade you.
Did you put down $5,000 on a Tesla S?
I used to work for Honda, so I like Hondas. I like Japanese cars.
Yes, I do too.
Tesla. I mean, when it comes out, it's going to look really nice.
Sounds Japanese.
Tesla. When it comes out, it's going to be really cool, but it's going to break all the time. I mean, that's what new cars do.
I know.
You want a good car? Buy a Honda.
And our partner Andy said, I refuse to buy a car in its first you know, year of production. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with
they
you.
They break.
Hondas are... My Toyota minivan is, you know, infinitely better than my stupid German cars that I end up buying.
Hmm. Yeah.
Hey, I have a German last name.
Sprechen Sie Deutsch?
Nicht sprechen.
No speak?
No speaky. No speaky.
Sprechen Sie Orangensaft? See, my kids are right. I can only say orange juice in German. Well, on that note.
What else do you guys got?
I think.
You hear a wrap it?
I think that's it. I think that was good.
Hey, I do have a website.
Oh, good. What's that?
Old school website.
Really?
Yeah. CraigSieverson.com.
www.CraigSieverson.
Didn't even need the W's. Don't even need the W's.
SYVERSON.com. Yes. Craig Sieverson. Do you know if you do AugustCap.com without the W's, it says it asks you for access permission and it doesn't get you into the site? We got to fix that.
You got to fix that.
That's
a simple
absurd.
Problem. Yeah.
Have you tried the typo of CraigSieverson.com and see if you get like porno sites and stuff?
No, I actually also own SEVERSON.
Do you know that I own CraigSieversonSucks.com?
You're the one.
I'm waiting to put it up until there's some good cause.
When you're the next Ashton Kutcher, he's going to sell it back to you for a lot of money.
That's right.
I have twitter.com/CraigSieversonSucks.
No, but for a final plug, it's what I've been doing lately is a lot of presentation design for people. So, you know, you guys see hundreds and hundreds of terrible PowerPoints.
Yep.
So send them to me. I'll heal them.
You are the doctor. I will. I will say
this, Mr. Keynote, too. Yeah.
If we're pitching you, Craig, I just would say that you are a brilliant designer. You always
thank you.
Craig is the creative director of the Lobby Conference, my conference, and I'm looking at my table full of Craig's work. Literally, there's the newspaper that Craig created for the thing. There's the deck of cards Craig created.
There's a lobby orange wristband and an orange iPod. And
that's right.
Exactly.
Orange watch band. So, orange is
so
the color.
So CraigSieverson.com can get Craig's assistance. That'll be awesome, and we hope you'll come back.
I will indeed. I'll give you pointers.
All right, and Howard, welcome to the David Hornick Show.
My pleasure.
Are you guys going to be fortnightly, you think?
At least, don't you think? Every other week? Can we master this every other week, Howard?
Sure, why not? And if we have less than a few hundred people listening, we won't bother anymore.
Oh, we won't.
You're not going to
have thousands. Ashton Kutcher's going to tweet it, and we'll be have love. Hundreds of thousands. And if he doesn't, there's always that incredibly awesome Chris Sacco. He can do it.
All right, good luck and Godspeed.